And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to a solo game preview edition of the Warriors All 82 podcast, I'll say. Warriors played the Pelicans on Friday night in a meaningless game. No Steph Curry, no Andrew Wiggins, no Draymond Green. Memphis, across the country against the Kings, rested all their main guys. Both of these teams quite clearly are gearing up for a Sunday matchup for the 8 seed in Chase Center. One of the most, high stakes regular season games in recent memory. It's not, funny thing about it is, like, if this was 2 years ago, 2 seasons ago, 3 seasons ago, you know, normal NBA that we've all come to know, it'd be even more stakes on the line. This would be for the 8 seed and a playoff spot. This would be for either sneaking in to the 1-8 or your season's over. Now, that's not on the line Sunday. Winner goes into the 7-8 side of the play-in bracket. Loser goes to 9-10. And both those games will be Wednesday night, by the way. But the reason why you obviously want to be on the 7-8 side is if you're on the 7-8 side, you go on the road to start the play-in Wednesday night. But you win that game, you are the 7 seed. You play the 2, probably the Suns. You know, it'll be a tough matchup, probably the Lakers or Blazers in that game. But if you lose it, you then go home and wait to see the winner of 9-10, and you get them at home. So the first game's a free swing, the second one's the real elimination game. And honestly, it might be Grizzlies-Warriors again. And at this point, likely probably will be a rematch because the Spurs, who are sitting in the 10, don't have Derek White. They're just not playing well right now. So the winner of this Sunday regular season finale has a much clearer path to actually getting in the playoffs. And the loser is probably, you know, we would say is unlikely to get in. On our site, it's either going up Friday night or it will be up Saturday morning. But it's kind of a bigger, denser preview of Warriors-Grizzlies, which is the matchup that will decide if the Warriors get into the playoffs over the next probably 5 days. It's the most important team for them now to shift their focus. They've been studying them the last, really, you know, I would say a few days, but if you go into their more advanced scouting, it's been a week or two, because it's been pretty clear for a while this is the matchup it was probably going to come down to. I kind of put up some big questions of the matchup, some X factors. I'll go through them quick. To me, from the Warriors side, they just got to try to keep, I say Memphis off the glass, but it's really Jonas Valanciunas. He's basically the best offensive rebounder in basketball. He's top 10 if you look at just like the advanced metrics of when he's on the floor, what percentage of offensive rebounds does he get. He's in the top 10, but if you just look straight up second chance points, I'm talking the bruisers that go in, they leverage for a position and they get it and they're immediately trying to put it back. It's as of me talking on Friday, Enes Kanter is number one in the NBA with 316 second chance points this year, and Valanciunas is second with 314. Very similar players, brutes. Now, Valanciunas can move a bit better defensively, which is going to matter because if he's on the court, though, on the other side, the Warriors are really going to try to attack him, get him in space, and he's exploitable. He's not full Enes Kanter exploitable, but he's very much a target when he's out there defensively. But the Warriors have rebounding problems. I'm looking at it right now. They are the fourth worst rebounding team in basketball this season. They're the ninth worst defensive rebounding team. Obviously, they're only playing one center at the moment, Kevon Looney, who has been rebounding better lately, and that needs to be noted. He's had nice nights against Jokic, against Embiid, against, you know, Gobert, some of the bigger bodies in the league. Draymond obviously looks livelier lately, so they've been boxing out a bit more. They had that really bad night in Minnesota a couple weeks ago, which was their most recent, like, really bad loss. And I think they gave up 16 offensive rebounds maybe to Minnesota that night. They just weren't boxing out well. That'll be such a key on Sunday against Valanciunas, because you can move him out of the paint. If you keep a body on him, you can kind of wall him off. And I was, you know, and you'll see it if you read the article I wrote on The Athletic. But, you know, I clipped up some clips from their first two matchups in Memphis, which on the surface you would think there's not much informative tape from those matchups. It was mid-March. It was Steph Curry had just hurt his tailbone in Houston right before they went to Memphis. They went to Memphis for a back-to-back. It's the only two times they've met this season. Curry's out. He doesn't play in either of those games. So that right there strips away so much potential information that we could have gleaned from the matchups. Jaren Jackson Jr., another big man I should probably discuss, particularly from an offensive rebounding interior aspect, wasn't back yet. He currently is. He recently was put back in their starting lineup. And, but, you know, if you look at the tape of that game, there's still small stuff to glean from the guys who were on the floor. Now, the Warriors actually won the first game of that, which, you know, we've kept referencing the 1-7 without Steph Curry this season. That was the one. Jordan Poole, it was in the middle of one of his hottest streaks of the season. I believe he had 26 in the opener. Wiggins had 40. They played really well on the road. Looney was good in that game. And they pretty easily handled a Grizzlies team that had Morant, had Valanciunas. Like, they had, you know, most of their components. It was kind of a bad performance by Memphis. And then the next night, Looney has a false positive test the night of the first game. He can't play in the second one. They had to put him in health and safety protocols for one day just to ensure it was a false positive test. The Warriors actually start Alan Smailagić at center in that game. I believe he had 5 fouls in 6 minutes. Valanciunas kind of just tossed him around like a rag doll. But at the same time, like, the Warriors are leading late in that game. They probably should have won that game. And I remember leaving that back-to-back thinking, like, Memphis is just not impressive right now. They almost got swept at home by a team with no Curry, no, you know, in the second game, no center at all because Looney's not even there, and they're starting Smailagić. But within that, Valanciunas, I think, had 16 rebounds in the first game and maybe 15 in the second game. And there were just, he's just relentless on the glass. He's huge. He throws bodies around, and he's just always trying to get offensive rebounds. And if you let your guard down, that's just 2 extra points he's just going to kind of vacuum up over the course of the game. And there are a few clips, and I put at least one of them up there on the article where he's just, he's running in, and, you know, it's Michael Mulder. I think it was Damian Lee, or just, they're not noticing that he's behind him. And so he just, you know, hip checks him out of the way, and it's a bucket. Now, there's other examples of them walling Valanciunas off really well. Typically, it's Draymond Green. In the first game, it's Kevon Looney. Sometimes it's, you know, a guard or a wing. I think Wiggins boxed him out one time well. Oubre, you know, should be noted, is in the mix both of these games. He's guarding Ja Morant for the bulk of Morant's possessions in isolation. And this is where you're going to feel the loss of Kelly Oubre a bit more than maybe recently. Yes, the offense is flowing a little bit better without him, and he brings negatives to the table, certainly. But he also can, you know, be a capable, just like, isolation defender on scores, particularly quick twitch, fast scores. Wiggins is good at it, too. Wiggins is going to get shifts on Morant, but, you know, against elite scorers in this league, it's never a one-man job. You want to throw different looks at them. And, you know, Kent Bazemore, again, will probably play the Oubre role. And Kent Bazemore does have some of those gifts as well. But I thought Oubre guarded Morant well, if you relook at the tape. But just quickly back to Valanciunas, they just, like, to me, it's such a key. Because if you wall him off the glass enough, like, he's going to get a few offensive rebounds regardless. He's probably going to finish the game at minimum in the 8 range. And, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr., again, I must mention, he'll probably be attacking it, although he's not nearly as active there as Valanciunas. But if you just don't get mauled on the glass, then you go on the other end and you can exploit them more. You know, you can get them out in space, and suddenly it's much more of an advantage that tilts more the Warriors' way. My big Memphis question is, how attentive are they to the Steph Curry matchup and just defensive scheme? Because we've seen it this season. Veteran teams guard the pet action, the Warriors off ball stuff, pin downs, fake DHOs, you know, slip screens off ball, and then just, you know, Steph Curry relocation threes, some of just the quick twitch Steph. Oh, he, you know, he's flipping behind Draymond here. He's getting the, you know, just the stuff that you've seen over years and years and years with the Warriors and Curry. Veteran teams guard it better because they, like us as viewers and followers of the Warriors, have seen it as well. It's why LeBron James this season has, and the Lakers have been such a tough matchup for the Warriors offense in particular. They, because like LeBron will just see the slip coming and he's, you know, he's bolting like a free safety right into the passing lane, pick six the other way. On the flip side, you've seen young defenses this season just get killed by some of the off-ball stuff because it's just, it's such a rare style in modern NBA. You know, it's less like, you know, isolation pick and roll and just like kind of the more stagnant stuff. I can remember Charlotte, who had, you know, they had the LaMelo Ball, Miles Bridges, PJ Washington, like that defensive team. And when they were in Chase Center, and it was the only time they played Steph, it was once this season, first time a lot of those guys had seen him. And I think the Warriors had 11 dunks in the first quarter because they were just confused by, you know, it's like, whoa, this is like slip screen. Uh-oh. And, they, you know, they'd be told on the scouting report, like, you know, make sure you just like got to get out on Steph. It's Steph. So they're losing their man on kind of the back door. I remember it actually was Oubre that night. I think he had 6 dunks in the first quarter. But, you know, it's JTA now a bunch. It's Bazemore will slip for some stuff. Draymond will do the fake DHO and go dunk. And, you know, if Memphis isn't ready for that, and, you know, make no mistake, Taylor Jenkins is in that staff, is in the film room before, you know, even today's game against the Kings. They're not looking at Kings tape. They're completely looking at all the Warrior stuff. So it's not like these guys will be, you know, completely unaware that this is the type of stuff that the Warriors do, but it's just, you got to feel it. You know, it can be a complicated offense to understand how to defend. And, you know, for example, I've shown a bunch of Thunder clips online this year, but, you know, Steph Curry just destroyed the Thunder because not only are they a young defensive team, but they're just, you know, the talent is a lot less, at least the version of the Thunder that the Warriors played. But Steph would come off, you know, I'll even mention New Orleans. This is maybe a little bit more of a comparison of like young, talented team. When they went down to New Orleans, the Pelicans hadn't seen Steph much. And that first game, they were, particularly the first half of the first game, they just lost him a bunch where it would be Steph coming off a high screen. They were told to trap. They were told to double. They did. Steph gets it out of his hands, and you could see Zion, even Eric Bledsoe, more of a veteran, just relax, like, whew, okay, nice, we got it out of Steph's hand. Just like if they were playing Portland, they'd be like, whew, nice, got it out of Damian Lillard's hand. But then Steph just reactivates, and then he scatters to the corner, and by the time they realize it, they're like, oh no, I forgot, he does that. Steph's already in the corner, he's taking a three because Draymond's pitching it back. And to me, from the Memphis side of things, that's the concern. This is just, Ja Morant has never faced Steph Curry in a game. A lot of their younger defenders have either never seen him or have barely seen him. Now, they have solid defensive players. Desmond Bane, I like. Dylan Brooks, solid defender. But this is just a different animal, and I'm just curious how ready they are just for all of that action. The X factor that I put up on the article was Ja Morant's jumpers. He's a career 3-point shooter. He was 33% last year. He's actually declined a bit this year, only 30.6%. He's only taken 3.8 per game. So, you know, he'll take it, but that's a very low volume in the modern NBA. When you're star point guard, he scores 19 points a game. He's only taken just under 4 threes, and it's, you know, the confidence level is not completely there. He, you know, it's a little Westbrook-y where it's like his first, second, third mission is get to the paint, get to the rim, explode by you. If you're in front of him, he wants to dunk over you. Go watch the tape against the Warriors this season in those games that, again, didn't tell us a bunch. But Ja Morant tried to dunk on Draymond Green twice, tried to dunk on him hard. But if you look over the course of those games, I'm pulling up stats right now, but I mean, Morant, I believe one night was like 6 of 12, still a pretty low scoring night, low impact night from him the first night. And then the second night, I think he was like 5 of 15, didn't shoot it well from three. And if you watch the way the Warriors defended him, and I put it in the article if you want to see a couple of the clips, but Looney gets switched out on him one time, and Looney immediately takes like 4 steps back, and he's just like, go ahead and take the three. And where Looney's trusting his long arms and just his isolation experience, where if John Morant tries to drive by him, he thinks he can bother the shot enough. But if John Morant wants to take what's basically an uncontested three, they're going to give him the uncontested three. In this particular clip, John Morant steps into it. He bricks it front rim. Warriors get the rebound. Defensive stop. Another time, Draymond Green kind of gets caught on him in semi-transition, so he's guarding him for the full possession. He does the same thing as Looney does, probably even more disrespectfully. Like, Draymond goes all the way back in the paint, and John Morant doesn't want the jumper that time. He kind of goes like running start at Draymond. This wasn't one of the couple of times where he tried to dunk on Draymond. Draymond kind of meets him 12 feet out, you know, straight up verticality. It's just like kind of smart Draymond Green defense. And Ja tries to floater over him and misses it. Like, it was a really good contest. And that, to me, is kind of the X factor in the game. Because you just know the way the Warriors are going to scheme it up, they're going to kind of force Ja Morant to try to have to hit some jumpers, hit some like floater range shots, maybe even a couple mid-rangers. And he can. I mean, it's not like it's impossible for him to. So if he hits enough of those, that'll change the complexion of this game. So to me, that's what I put as the X factor. I have a bit more in there, including like prediction, which, you know, I think the Warriors are going to win. They'll be the Vegas favorite in the game. So you can read that. It's up on our site. It dives a bit deeper into some of these subjects that I'm talking about. But within the prediction, part of the reason I took the Warriors is, you know, Steve Kerr, who like I said, he rests Wiggins, rests Draymond, rests Steph, given the chance, as Memphis did coming into this game. So he should have a pretty fresh lineup of his main guys, and this is obviously winning time. He understands the stakes. We've talked all season about chasing wins, not chasing wins, running Steph into the ground. And, you know, he doesn't love to just overload Steph's minute totals, even in playoff games. He doesn't love to just go 42 Steph minutes. But, you know, this week, these are these more one-game scenarios where the Warriors are trying to survive and get into a first round, where you can kind of more delicately play it in a game one, game two. You don't have to go balls to the wall. You kind of do right now. I think Steve Kerr is going to, if he needs to, if this is a close game, play Steph Curry 41 minutes. Play Draymond Green near 40. Wiggins 42. And that, to me, cuts off, you know, where Memphis has an advantage, where Memphis is a deeper team. They go, you know, 10, 11 guys that are a bit more capable than when you start looking at Warriors guys, number 6, 7, 8, 9 in their rotation. So, you know, there's less non-Steph minutes. There's just that depth matters less in this type of scenario. So that, to me, tilts it even more in the Warriors' advantage. But it's a one-game NBA situation. Anything can happen. I'm excited to see the game. It is, to this point, the most important game in Chase Center history. Tip-off time is 12:30 p.m. It's on ESPN Sunday afternoon. And what should kick off, you know, depending on how long the Warriors last, should kick off a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks of what should be really fun basketball. And from a Warriors perspective, it's a return to the playoffs. So we will talk to you after that game Sunday. I think we're going to have a big Warriors plus minus probably posting Monday. And from here, I'm going to kick it to Juan Toscano-Anderson's interview from the other day for anybody that would like to hear it. This is after he signed his first guaranteed contract, which will keep him on the roster, Warriors roster, next season. That's a good deal for the Warriors on the minimum next season. Here's Juan. He just had plenty of you know, really thoughtful, candid, reflective answers. So here that is to close it out.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's a butterfly effect for
real. Hey, Juan, man, obviously, you know, nothing has come easy to you in your career, dating all the way back to high school. You were clearly really excited this morning. You tweeted about it, 5:30 in the morning. You were up and awake. What was that feeling when you put pen to paper today, knowing all that you've gone through and how it wasn't like it wasn't an easy route and you've really had to pull it out the mud?
Man, that's a great question. I think I felt every emotion. I was happy, excited, very emotional. Obviously, this is the most – obviously, you guys watch me play. You know I don't play for the money, but, like, this is the most money I've ever made in my life or I've ever, you know. So I know that I can do a lot of things with this type of money to help my family, and that's what I've always been about, man, since I grew up on 95th, you know. There was 15 people in that house, in a three-bedroom house. And, you know, man, I just grew up in the mud. And so it's a different life, but not even for myself, man. I'm just super excited to be able to help my little brother. You know, he just got his license a week ago. And, you know, it might be a small gesture to me, but I wasn't able to get a car at the age of 18. I didn't even get my first car until I was 26 years old. You know, and so little things like that, man, I'll be able to help my little brother get a car. You know, that's going to change his life. He's going to be able to get a job. He's going to be able to be mobile. He's going to be able to be a young man, be a young adult, not having to depend on mom. And so it's the little things like that I think about. You know, I'm just super excited, obviously, for myself to be on the team and continue to play basketball. But it's just a life-changing contract is just a life-changing signature, you know. And there's more work to be done. I get kind of paranoid in situations like this because I am happy, but now the real work starts now. You know, I don't want to say I feel pressure because I don't feel pressure, but I feel like there's more that I need to do. I need to raise the bar. I always said when I first was able to step up to this podium and do interviews that I wanted to be a guy who establishes himself in this league and is not just here for, you know, preseason or a 10-day or a call-up. And so that's the first step. I've gotten through the first step to put myself in a situation to be here for another year. And so now I'm working to continue and have longevity in this league. And so, like I said, there's a bit of paranoia. Like, I need to really now kick it into another gear. So with all that being said, though, man, I'm super excited. I could sit here and talk all day about how excited I am for myself, how excited I am for my friends and my family. And I know Oakland is super proud of me. And so, man, it's just a combination of so many emotions. It's just really exciting.
You played well enough this season where, I mean, you theoretically could have tested the open market. Did you always know, like, it's got to stay with the Warriors, basically?
No, I didn't always know that because it is a business. And so luckily I've been able to play some years within, not in the NBA, but in the basketball business prior to coming here. But, I mean, this is where my heart is, man. I'm an East Oakland kid. I'm a Warrior. I'm a Warrior for life, man, you know. So regardless if, you know, I'm here for the rest of my career or I'm just here for another year, like, this is always going to be a part of my heart and a part of me, who I am. You know, I grew up idolizing Larry Hughes. Now I get to play with Stephen Curry. Like, you just don't say no to things like that, man. And, you know, I'm sure there were some more opportunities out there for me, but this is home for me. Everybody has made me feel at home. Steve has never, ever made me feel like I was on two-way. None of the coaches, none of my teammates, you know, Dre, Steph, Clay, they've all taken me under their wing, and, you know, they really make me feel a part of this. So it was a no-brainer for me. I don't care about the money, man. Somebody could have offered me $15 million. Nah, I ain't gonna say that. But somebody could have offered me, you know, a significant amount of money. But I think I would have still chose to be here, man. I love it here. I love the Bay. I love the Warriors. And I love my teammates. I love it. Like I said, it's just, it was a no-brainer for me.
Juan, you kind of alluded to the, oh, sorry, Garrett.
No, why don't you go ahead?
Thank you. You alluded to it, just, you know, being a kid from Oakland, you were part of the Warriors youth program. What does this franchise and this organization mean to you as a person, regardless of being a now full-time roster member? Just what is it, how has it impacted your life?
I mean, now it's a more personal impact, but I grew up going to games, so it gave me dreams. You know, just from a very young kid, like, I always wanted to walk in the Oracle onto that court donning an NBA jersey. You know, I never imagined that it would be wearing a Warrior jersey. And so just the Warriors themselves, for what they are, they've given me dreams. They've given me an idea of where I wanted to be in my life and what I wanted to do. And so, man, Miss Addos, if you're out there watching, like, I'm so thankful to you because you changed my life. You know, I was just a kid going to Stonehurst Elementary. A kid pulled out a knife on me in second grade, and my mom made me transfer. And then I met this lady, and she just changed my life. So she's a direct extension of the Warriors. You know, her husband is a Warriors legend. So the Warriors mean everything to me. And now I'm on this team is just like, it's a storybook. It's a movie. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. But it means everything to me. I'm just extremely happy to now be taking a step forward in my life and, like, you know, be here and have some prolonged time here looking forward.
Well, I know you had a successful career in Mexico, but when was the last time you knew where you would be playing the next season?
This is the first time in my career. And so, man, people don't even realize how stressful that is. You know, I never ever gotten a summer since I left for college. Buzz made us stay and do summer school every year. And then after I was playing pro, I was playing national team. I was picking up odd jobs and all over the world. And so now that I have an actual schedule, I'm able to just really just sit back and relax. For the first time in my life, I'm talking about going on vacation with my family. I've never been anywhere with my mom other than Disneyland. You know, that was vacation to us. That was a huge vacation to us growing up. And so now I feel extremely fortunate to be able to, like, I can pretty much take my mom anywhere she wants in the world. And so those are the type of things that I get excited about. I get excited to be able to hang out with my friends and hang out with my family. I get excited to, you know, just make plans finally. Never been able to make plans. So that's just like it's a relief for sure.
The Warriors just posted the video of your mom's phone call to you where she said she was proud of you, and it brought a tear to your eye.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of walk us through what you were thinking there?
Everything I've been through in my life, I've been through with my mom, physically, mentally, emotionally, literally everything. And so we share this moment together. That's my best friend. That's my hero. That's Superwoman. I think she's the strongest person in this world. Man, I can't wait to. I know my mom don't care about material things, but I can't wait to repay my mom however I can one day, because my mom has sacrificed so much for me to be here, you know. I've been through a lot of stuff in my life, but, you know, now that I look back on it, it never seemed that bad, because my mom she was bulletproof. She was like a cushion for life, you know, so she protected us from everything. And so the older I get and, you know, I start to become more conscious and aware of things, real life things, and how hard life is. You know, life is really hard. I can't do nothing but stand up and salute my mom, because she's just the toughest person in the world. My mom is a gangster. And I mean that in every sense of it. My mom is a real gangster for everything, you know. And so whether that's a new car one day, a new home, new jewelry, I don't care what it is. I got it for my mom, because I wouldn't be here without her. I'll give my mom my last. That's my whole heart. I love her to death. And so thank you, Mom.
Juan, I know
this has international ramifications, and if you allow me, there's a whole country with 110 million people crying with you today. And I'm going to go bilingual because hay 110 millones de mexicanos, Juan, que hoy están llorando contigo. Porque después de Horacio Llamas, de Eduardo Nájera, de Gustavo Ayón y de Jorge Gutiérrez, tú te has convertido en el quinto mexicano en tener un contrato de esta naturaleza. Y tú hoy, no sé si tienes noción de lo que le envías a niños que están en barrios, que no tienen cómo comer y que usan el balón para soñar y que ven a Juan Toscano Anderson y dicen, yo puedo ser él también. ¿Lo piensas y qué significa para ti en español este día? Y si entiendes lo que significa para México lo que está pasando hoy.
Sí, lo entiendo un poco. Pues lo entiendo mucho, pero no estoy viviendo ahí o no me siento exactamente como ellos, los sentimientos que ellos tienen, pero de redes y mensajes y todo eso, sí, sí puedo ver y es un honor. Estoy muy orgulloso de ser mexicano, pero de ser un líder, una imagen para niños, y no solo en México, también me mandan mensajes de Venezuela, Argentina, España, todos lugares. Creo que es más que solo mexicanos, es más que latinos. Me vean y I don't know. They find encuentran motivación. Pero como dijo, es un honor y no lo llevo como es algo muy importante, muy serio, y pues voy a seguir luchando para pues llevarlos a algo más alto.
Juan, I know that, you know, you had a couple offers when you're in the G League from teams overseas for significantly more money, but you chose to stick it out and make way less money in the G League. What was kind of your thought process with those decisions, and how are you feeling, you know, now that obviously it's paid off?
I mean, there's a lot that goes into that. You know, I was really happy in the G League. I was extremely happy. Even I was only making, $3,000 a month, and I was having the time of my life. And I'm a firm believer, if it's not broke, don't fix it, you know? Yeah, I could have gone and made more money, but money's not the answer to everything that I would have, you know, sacrificed to go make that money. You know, my mom's getting older. My little brother's growing up. My little sister's growing up. I got an older brother who just moved to Texas. Like, I missed out on a lot of their lives, you know, when I went away for college and when I was playing overseas. And don't get me wrong, those are the sacrifices that you have to make to, you know, elevate in life. And I'm more than willing to make those sacrifices for my family, but I'm also not going to make those, you know, just for a couple dollars. And when I say a couple dollars, I mean it is a couple dollars in perspective, because no amount of money is going to, you know, give me that time back that I lost with my family. No amount of money is going to, you know, protect me if I get a phone call about my family, if something goes wrong and I'm on the other side of the world and I can't make it home. No amount of money is going to, you know, cure those or, you know, band-aid those feelings. And so I was happy. I was in a good situation. I was enjoying basketball, and that's what I do this for, is just to really enjoy the game, really enjoy this journey that the basketball and life has taken me on. And so I passed up on a few offers over there, and I'm glad I did, because had I not, then I would have been making a different type of money, and it's kind of hard to turn down those type of contracts when, you know, they come rolling in. And so I'm just glad that I did everything my way. There were a ton of people who told me that I was making the wrong decision by going to the G League. There were even some people telling me that I shouldn't have come to a camp with the Warriors last year because they didn't have a roster spot and so forth. And so I still did it all my way. And at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, even if I fail, I can always look myself in the mirror and say, you know, I did it Juan's way. And so I'm super proud of that. It's a lot of people out here who just kind of go through the motions and they kind of take everybody else's advice and guidance. And so, yes, I asked for guidance from my OGs, from, you know, my big homies, from vets in the locker room, but I still make every decision based on how I feel in my heart. And so my heart always told me to just follow my dreams, and that's what I did.
Hello, Juan. Congratulations about your new contract,
right,
first of all.
Go ahead.
You deserve it.
Christos,
I would like to ask you, if you look back on your career, what was the biggest sacrifice that you made about basketball through your career in Venezuela and Mexico? And also, how proud do you feel that you are a great example for the young kids who are starting to play ball or who are starting to make something in their lives?
Yeah, biggest sacrifice? I think everything was a sacrifice. I think everything is kind of equal in that, you know, you put your body on the line every day. You go into countries where you've never been, where you don't know anybody. And just leaving it, like I said before, it's the time that you can't get back. And the older I get, the more I am understanding of that. Like, I thought my mom was going to be young forever. I thought my mom was going to be a spunky 35-year-old woman forever, but that's not the case. My mom's getting older, and so my mom is all I got. You know, my mom, my brothers and sisters, they all I got. So I hold them near and dear to my heart. And that's why I just feel like this situation is, it was destined. It's God sent for sure, because nowhere better than to be at home playing for the home team. I get to enjoy everything I get to do with my family. You know, once I leave Chase Center, I can drive across that bridge and go straight home and celebrate all of this with my family. And actually, that's what I'm about to go do. So I'm going to go get a nice home-cooked meal with my mom, and now I'm going to leave y'all for Jordan Bell. Welcome back, Jordan Bell.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.